This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Raycon and Honey. More on that in just a second, but right now, let's get into the dew.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here at Studio Jeans doing it at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. I'm Ryan Sickler on all social media, RyanSickler.com. This week, I want to hit you. I got to look over here at these damn dates. The 27th through the 30th, I'm out there with your boy Tom Segura on a Take It Down tour there in Tornado Alley. I'm kind of nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. Tulsa, Wichita, and Kansas City. I can't wait to get out there and see y'all. August 1st through 3rd, House of Comedy in Minnesota. September 14th at the Famous in Baltimore. And I just want to, again, every week I say thank you so much for all the messages, the emails, everything. You guys are fantastic. I have family and friends hitting me up, be like, damn, your fans are amazing. And you guys are amazing. So thank you. Please make sure you're subscribed. Get over to the Your Mom's House YouTube page. Subscribe there as well. The website is thehoneydewpodcast.com. That's where you'll find everything, the merch, all the social media links and everything. So make sure you're following along. And if you're new to the do, what we're doing over here is we're highlighting the lowlights. And my guest this week is an old friend who has a brand new book out here. Please welcome. The book here actually is Greg Giraldo, A Comedian's Story by Matt Ballacher and Wayne Jones. And I just said half the duo over here. My guest, Matt Ballacher. Welcome to the Honeydew, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Shake it up, my man. Shake it up. Your first person shook my hand on the Honeydew. Probably because we're sitting this way.
Yeah.
Actually, no, they could have reached across. Anyway. Welcome, brother, and
thanks,
congrats on this book.
Thank you.
Before we get into anything, as I always like to do, please, in addition to the book, anything you'd like to promote, where they can find you, find out about you, what you have going on, please.
Sure. Check out GregGiraldoBook.com. All the social media handles, we're at GregGiraldoBook. We're doing some events, some shows, some signings. And on Twitter, the author, me, is at Maddie B. Game. And you can find Wayne Jones on there, too.
There we go. You know, I was talking to you before, and I'm so glad you're here. I was talking to you before about how, working with Greg for a weekend, and I just how great he was and how amazing he was and just how much fun it was. And I said to you, like, I didn't know. So I don't even know why you did this. Did you know Greg well? Like, what was your reason for putting this book together?
Good question. I was a big,
and if I pass prematurely, will you please do one about me? Because I don't know anybody else that would. All right.
I want to write that, get that right.
I would be before. Ryan Sickler, another comedian story.
A second comedian story, yeah. Well, do you remember Tough Crowd? Well,
yeah, sure, of course. That's what we were talking about. The moment he put Dennis Leary in his place, and then Dennis Leary years later saying, you know, he was 100% right. He was prepared. And just,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that was around the time I got into stand-up myself. And so I remember doing open mics around 2002, 2003, and then coming home and watching Tough Crowd. And it wasn't just Greg, but like Colin Quinn, DePaulo, yeah. Keith, like all those
Patrice.
Guys, of course, rest in peace, they were like what I aspired to be. And they were so good. It wasn't like, oh, I will be this way, but that was like my dream. And then, you know, fast forward several years, I got a second boy on the way. It's 2015. We're my wife and I are moving from Mountain View, like the Bay Area, to Orange County. And for a while, I was going all right in comedy, you know. But then when we came back here, the steady stream of bar gigs weren't paying the bills, and I had the realization, like, you know, I got to do something to make actual money, especially with this next kid on the way. And so I had to get a desk job. Like, I worked at a financial services firm in Orange County area. And so I was at break, and I went to Amazon because I was like, you know, I just want to read about comedy. I wanted something to kind of distract me from what I had to do. And I searched for Greg Giraldo book, and there wasn't any. And that was sort of my aha moment. And I was like, you know what? I'll do it. And I had no idea.
No, like, shit.
Like, I worked.
I love that. So bored that you look for a Giraldo book, and then
I was like, I can do it.
I can do that.
And I had no.
Hey, is it Taco Tuesday? All right. Go ahead.
All right.
That's me at my desk job.
Is it
wondering
Taco
about
Tuesday?
To leave.
Yeah. I was like,
it's about to be my last casual Friday, y'all. About to write a Greg Giraldo book.
And I had to like write emails before we were going to lunch, like announcing, like, I'm going to be on break in 45 minutes, just, you know, FYI. And so a few days after that, I contacted Jesse Joyce, who opened for Greg. They also wrote together. And he was, I think, the first interview. And then Kareth Foster, who was a kind of a mutual friend of ours, she was friends with Geraldo's manager, Rick Dorfman. And she connected me to him. And that was important because she sort of vouched for me, because I knew I was going to have to contact some people who weren't comedians, who were close to him, and be like, who the fuck are you? You know, like, they have no idea what my angle was and, right. and why I was doing it. And I guess in a large extent, like, I didn't really know why I was doing it, other than like, I wanted to hear more about him.
So did you start writing it at that job?
Yeah.
You did?
Well, no, I mean, of course, only at night, and when I would never...
Of course, off hours. Yeah.
Off hours. But
that's where you began the project.
Yeah. And beginning it primarily involved calling up people and doing interviews. And initially, like, I would do it by hand, and then I got a call recorder app on my phone, and I did about 20 of them. And then I realized, like, this is a lot more work.
Yeah,
than I bargained for.
You're published, bro. This is a book. That's a congrats. That's something I would really like to do one day, or you do for me.
Well, like I say, if you die, you're the next one.
Yeah, well.
But maybe we can start it while you're alive. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get it going now. You know what I'm saying? I'd like to give it a peruse before I check out. You know what I'm saying? Make sure I'm cool with everything that you're leaving behind.
It's better than a eulogy.
So I'm really proud of you. You know, we go way back.
Thank you. You
mentioned bar gigs, but you ran a show that by no means was a bar gig, even though it was above a bar, and it was at Red Rock, which isn't even there anymore.
No,
on Sunset.
Ale House or something.
Ale House. Yeah. But it was an attic upstairs, and I don't know, what would you say it seated? It was intimate, 50, 75.
Yeah, unless really Joe Rogan was performing, then we like... Then it was 2000, I think. But yeah, I'm probably about
everyone 50. Did it. It was so good. Tom and Christina, everybody was at that show. And that's really where I met you and got to know you. And it was such a good room.
Thank you.
And you've, as I ask everybody to send me some of the stories, and you've sent some stories where I was like, man, how the fuck do I not know any of this? So what I'd like to do is now get to know the author a little bit here. I always say it's the stories behind the storytellers. Why don't you just start? We talked about going linear. I mean, the reason you're an American is how you started this whole email. So I'd love to hear about all this.
Yeah. Nazis are the reason I'm an American. And my mom was born in Germany, and it was kind of through unfortunate circumstances. Like, she wasn't German. Her family is from Yugoslavia. And I think this was in the, gosh, early 40s. And the Nazis invaded where they lived. And a lot of her siblings were much older. So, I mean, they vividly remember it. Those that are still around. And
you sit and listen to these stories and hear this stuff.
I should hear more. Unfortunately, the two of them have passed.
Yeah.
But so the Nazis invaded. And then my mom ended up being born in like a displaced persons camp. And how she tells the story. And obviously,
In Germany.
Okay. And they were actually fortunate in that the people that were in charge were comparatively like gracious. You know, they as far as I know, there was no like abuse or, I mean, it was still a really crappy situation, but they're Catholic, and however it worked, someone in America, in Chicago, Illinois area, there's a big like Slovenian community there apparently, sponsored them to like immigrate over. And I don't know how it worked, but
I love that the Slovenians are in Chicago. They're used to that cold.
Like, yes,
negative 6 8 shit, man. Come on, man. I'm out
this
here in shorts and a tank top. Where I come from, it's -60, motherfucker.
And so, yeah, all six of them and their parents moved to, I think, like a one-bedroom apartment in Chicago. And so, in a way, like, that was their, I wouldn't say American dream, but like, it was pretty shitty. You know, like,
they're alive. And out.
And my mom's like the most optimistic person ever, and like, so that's what, I mean, obviously I love it here, and she ended up getting a job years later at Pan Am Airlines.
That's where my father worked at Pan
Small
Am.
World. Mm-hmm. So that's how I'm an American and not
a German.
Slovene. Yes.
Jesus. So you're born where, in Chicago?
No, I was born in Oceanside. Like, I grew up in Carlsbad.
Okay.
San Diego County. So when it comes to adversity scores, not very high.
Well, on the map, it may not be.
Yeah. But
tell us about at birth.
Oh, sure. My birth was a Halloween. I was a Halloween baby. And I think I cock-blocked my older brother's Halloween fun because my mom went into an early labor, about 2 months early. And how my dad tells a story, I guess he was driving pretty fast.
That's pretty devastating, though. Like, it's Halloween. It's my birthday, motherfucker. Yes, yes. No, it's Halloween.
No,
I think
it's
you
my
mean
birthday,
my motherfucking yeah. birthday.
So on the I don't know if it happened on the way to the hospital or during delivery, but in the process of being born, I got blood in my lungs. And I don't know how long it was, but that it caused some damage. And they didn't really know the extent of
what,
it.
What kind of damage?
Brain damage.
Okay.
But they didn't know. And also then neurological damage. I mean, I guess it's, but also motor skills. And but, you know, they can't really test your motor skills when you're right. 14 minutes old or whatever. So I was in the hospital for a couple months, I think. And so that sort of colored my first, really like 6 years of life, because they knew I had some issues, but they didn't really know the extent.
So is it really like it's you're just going to have to wait to see as you get older, you'll start seeing things happen and that's the way it goes?
Yeah, Matthew may not be like the other kids kind wow. of thing, but they could diagnose cerebral palsy. That was what they could tell, because I guess that's a common birth defect.
Bad news, we don't know what you got. Good news, put a costume on, yeah. motherfucker. It's Halloween. It's
like, here's a dum-dum. Now go push him out there. Yeah.
Trick or treat.
Give him a bottle, yeah. Some Yoo-Hoo in it. So yeah, that was my first Halloween, and
so they could diagnose, you said, CP at the time.
Yeah,
cerebral palsy.
And that's a I'm sure you've seen people with it. It can be incredibly debilitating.
Yeah.
And so
you said you had it here before, and I was completely blown away. I had no idea, and you were like, I'm glad, but yeah, I've never.
Yeah, because that was, you know, when you have something. And especially when you're a little kid, we're all self-conscious. I mean, you're confident. Maybe you weren't, but I was a self-conscious kid. And so it influences everything you do. You're like, you don't even think of yourself as like your name for it. It's like, oh, you're the dude with like the disease or something right. like that.
And also it's your whole world and someone else may not even see it.
Right.
Yeah. And all you're doing is focusing on whatever that thing is. Other people don't even see that.
And it was a blessing, I guess, because like my older brother never really brought it up. And neither did my dad. I mean, they didn't act like I didn't have anything, but I don't think they wanted it to define me, especially at the beginning. And like, I was a very happy kid kind of until I went to kindergarten and I became a happy adult. But like, that was awkward because, well, when your
kids have no fucking filter.
No, it was like my first week there. And I don't think this had anything to do with me having cerebral palsy, but I was in the bathroom. And my older brother was in fifth grade, and so it went up to sixth grade. So
okay.
I don't know what sixth graders were doing in a kindergartner's bathroom. That's a different story, but I got thrown in the trash like on one of my first days.
Sixth graders threw you in the trash.
They're like, oh, Matthew. So they obviously knew my name. I was like, hey guys, I'm Teddy's brother. And then so I ended up getting thrown in the can, and I remember like being pretty scared because I couldn't get out. And then this other dude came in. And I thought to like help me out, and he just points and starts laughing. Like I remember, like hanging out because I wasn't like big enough to knock it over.
You fucking Oscar the Grouch.
And then I was like, help me, help me! And then this other boy took pity on me, I guess, and seemed like pissed. And he knocked over the trash can and got me out. And his name was Lester. And he ended up going to MIT. I don't know if that's the reason why, but he did a good deed and. He's probably making nuclear weapons or something now.
Thank you. Lester sounds like the name of a dude that would go to MIT.
Lester was good people, like. Man. But that...
Did you get bullied a lot?
I got made fun of a lot.
Made fun of.
And
I mean, well, that's... Today, it's so funny you say that. We are a different generation because today that is bullying. I mean, it was
true.
Then too, but we looked at it differently. We're like, oh, they're just teasing me and making fun of me. Like, I always... I guess the way I grew up, bullying was always physical, I felt like. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like someone actually putting hands on you, beating you up. And, you know, now you see that all of it is obviously bullying. But I didn't look at it like that either.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
that was the whole sticks and stones may break my bones, but names
but
will
words
never
will
hurt
never
me.
Hurt me. Yeah, yeah, or I'm rubber and you're glue. Like, and I was like, you didn't want it to
that's
like
all you had back then.
To let them know it like yeah. affected you, but
you say it while you're crying. Like, it's about me.
But like, no, I mean, just you know, whenever I'd walk, like, I had plenty of friends, but like some of them I ended up being friends with. Like, I remember walking by and they're going, you know, doing like that stuff, and then like a number of times people ask me like, are you retarded? And like not joke, no kids. And some were my age and like, I just be like, no, you are, you know, like, yeah. And I remember a few times actually like fighting them. Cause like my right hand worked just fine. And I remember like, I got, and
this
like,
is my jab.
And like fist fights. I'm like, I can't hold the toothpaste bottle, but this. And it was like,
I'll give you this fucking T-Rex claw, motherfucker.
And I remember getting called into the principal's office. They're like, why did you punch him? It's like, well, he said I was a retard. And then like, he made fun of my hand. And they're like, well, that's no excuse for punching him.
But what was your hand different than it is now? I don't.
Well, it was smaller.
They're doing this, but they're
a
not.
Little. But also, like, I went
what
to.
What stood out that they made fun of?
I couldn't really grab things well.
I got you.
And all, I think
like
I limped
or whatever.
Yeah, I limped more okay. than I do now. And also, I went to like the school. It was a public school, but they had this communication center, which was kind of like the special needs class too. So I would begin class with everyone else, and then Matthew would report to like the communication center, and then I'd go with like kids in wheelchairs or kids, you know, who were like. Took the short bus, you know, like very clearly had obvious issues, but there are also kids who like were deaf or had learning disabilities. And so they kind of grouped us together and we would do physical therapy, or I think, honestly don't remember like a lot of the coursework, but they would do certain lessons and then they dismissed me back to the regular class. So I think having
that like midday or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. And having that break, I mean, I get why they do that, because that's what I'm saying. I was a lab rat, because like everything I did, like I remember a teacher being like, can we watch you do jump rope? Or can we watch you jump rope at recess? I was like,
you better get two, motherfucker. I'm a double dutch champ.
I was like, you're not asking Logan. You're not asking Ryan to you know.
Can we watch you tie some knots?
And then they're basically there with like clipboards. So I was like, I don't think it's just to see how high I can jump. Like I was like, why is that guy wearing a lab coat? Like,
why is this guy?
She's not
a
regular teacher. And so
tie these 10 sets of shoes. Why are you guys asking me?
So when you get to like that, you just feel different.
So that was in this class?
Yeah, that was
that's your first half.
That began
of the day.
In kindergarten, and it went for years. But yeah, it was the first half of the day.
And they're studying you.
And there's and then like you know like why was I the only one who had to take an IQ test? And it was because like they knew that I was predisposed for maybe having issues like mental issues where and that was hard because. When people would say like, well, are you retarded? Or like, and I remember like a friend's mom, I was also kind of goofy too, which that a lot of kids are. He asked if I could come over and my mom's like, I'm not sure he's all there.
Said that?
Yeah. And, well, she said it to him and then he told me. So, and I didn't know what that meant at the time. I was like, what do you mean I'm all there? Like I'm sitting here. Or,
yeah, I'm right
or
here.
I'm standing here. But it just one of those things like, you know, up until I was really doing the show, I kind of forgot about that. But like these things that like stick out, like they really kind of influenced, I think, my adulthood.
Can I ask you, was there ever a time where you told that to your parents and then they had confrontations with anyone or?
Oh, yeah. Like, well, one time, like it was after the first time I did kindergarten. I think I probably told some of these.
You repeated kindergarten?
I repeated kindergarten. Yeah, I was that good at it. I have a master's in finger painting.
I still can't
and
spell
pooping
receipt.
My pants. Yeah, so they sent me to Montessori for like 6 months, but then I actually made some good friends at the public school, and then I wanted to go back there. So I think part of that was like they thought maybe I wasn't adjusting, and I argued that I wasn't adjusting because I was being pulled out all the time to go to like the special ed classes. But it's like
somebody not all there. That's right, a good strategy,
well,
bro.
Well, yeah. I mean, what would you do? I mean, you're a dad. So like, if your kid was, I mean, you probably want to know. Like,
yeah.
So it's like
I
want to
know
them.
Every fucking
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it also like because like I always wondered if I'd have real trouble academically. That was probably the best thing that happened from it, because I was like, dude, like, these people are going to, they're just going to know more stuff than I'm going to do. So if it takes them 10 minutes, it might take me an hour and a half to learn like 4 + 5, whatever. But like, I got something in my head that like might not work as well. So I gotta work a lot harder than they do to do the same thing.
That's a great attitude though. It really is. And so many people have come on here and they've talked about their struggles, and a lot of parents have that tough love, and it's helped. It's like, we're not going to treat you differently. We're not going to pity you. We're not going to, you know, make you feel any less or anything. And it's, I mean, it obviously pays dividends.
Oh, that, I mean, to parents out there who are, please do that. Like, I got a buddy who, I mean, he's since passed, but he had muscular dystrophy. So we were in like kind of the classes together, and his, you know, it progressed so
Larry,
rapidly.
Why are you here? You're only farsighted. Yeah, no. Jesus Christ. Why is he in this class?
What we're saying, but no, he still like had the attitude like, I'm like you, I'm like everyone else, and,
right.
Or I mean, in certain ways. And he was the best shit talker, total smart ass. And I think it's also because of his dad too. His dad was a football coach, another just like tough dude, and like if he would have overly coddled him and be like, you know, don't listen to those mean people, like he wouldn't have had the healthy adulthood he did.
That's great, dude. I want to hear this story about this lunch table redemption here, because as you've said, it's the possible apex of my life, in parentheses.
It might be. So my school had this idea to like separate recess by grades. Like you had to be 2 grades apart. So it used to be like, you know, first and second graders would play together. So I was in, I think, 4th grade, and had to eat lunch with the 6th graders. And the 6th graders were, I was different. They pretty much like had pubes, and like we're talking about kissing girls, and like they could play basketball and like dunk on the small courts. And like, I got to sit at the lunch tables with them once, and it was just like, don't screw this up. Yeah, you know, this is my chance. And like, I was a smart ass, and I think they liked that. So like, they let me kind of hang with them, and I was tall. And there was this woman who was kind of like a lunch lady, but she would sell milk. And generally she was
a milk lady.
Yeah. God, you're smart, man. And, she was sort of the authority figure, generally cool, but she could, you know, bust our balls some. And some kid was giving her attitude or something, and he called her lady. And she goes, my name's not lady. She goes, it's Janet. It's Janet. And I go, is it Miss Jackson if you're nasty? and like the 6th graders, they all just started just like,
yeah,
oh,
I bet
shit.
They went.
And then she goes, Matthew, get over the. So I had to like pick up my lunch and like sit at the tree. And I think I had to go to the principal's office. Like I was in big trouble, you know, because I was like showing up the milk lady. But after that, like,
great,
dude, like I was like 8 feet tall, walking around, giving high fives, and even
they're carrying
even,
you
even,
all
even like
shit.
The big 6th graders. I'm sure they called my mom. Like nothing they could have done, like you know, would have hurt me at that point. So that's why, like, putting some authority figure down was the highlight of my life.
That's fucking great. So then is that like because a lot of us, you know, either we didn't fight or we did, but we were always funny enough to get out of shit. You know, is that where you feel like you developed your thick skin through all this?
Yeah. And also I remember one of the kids at the table, we were playing basketball weeks later, and some other dude called me Goofy Matt. And like that used to, like, I thought of it like Goofy, like the cartoon character. He thought they were talking Goofy because of like cerebral palsy. And he got up in his grill and like talked shit, you know, and like.
I defended you?
He totally defended me. And at first I was like, I kind of didn't like, you know, I was like, I can defend myself. But I was like, yeah. And then like that guy never fucked with me again. And like, I'm not saying it's because I had this like ability to kind of be quick on my feet, word wise, but they didn't mess with me anymore after that. And that's why, like, I really, like, from then on, I had friends. You know, it wasn't like, there were other factors that influenced it, but that's what I point to as, like, the turning point from being, like, kind of the special kid.
What other factors?
Pardon?
You said there are other factors.
Oh, like, having good parents.
Yeah.
You know,
are your parents together?
They are, and they're still, like,
And you have how many siblings?
I got two brothers. You probably met, he did, the sound at Red Rock.
Oh, yeah, of
and he actually did, he directed Can We Take a Joke, where Christina did the VO work. And I got a younger brother. And So we're all pretty close. I mean, my other older brother was like 5 years older, so that was a little too far. But like my younger brother, we'd play basketball together or play whatever we could and just kind of hang out. And I think having that system also helped. You know,
I wanted to ask you, did you play sports growing up? And what did you like if you did?
I played, yeah. I didn't like baseball because I couldn't catch or shit, but...
What about bat? You said you had a hard time holding
things. I had a hard time gripping things, yeah. But, like, it's more like piano would be super, but, like, gotcha. I could do curl. Like, if it's, like, a basic kind of, like, gripping thing, that now it's...
So if better. I need you to grab a lead pipe in an alley,
I can do it, yeah. I'll shake a little bit. I'll need an adapt to help spot me or something.
But, I'll just be like, that's just adrenaline.
Just adrenaline.
That's just adrenaline.
I'll raise it with my right hand. It'll be a little off kilter, but we'll get up there as long as it's under 100 pounds.
Oh my god!
But yeah, so, I played basketball and I played tackle football, which I think is pretty much outlawed now.
Yeah, it's getting there.
You have to be in a real rough neighborhood to play Pop Warner these days.
What did you play? What position football?
I played D line.
Damn.
And O line. But mostly, I played 3 years, 2 years on the defensive line, 1 year tackle O-line.
And basketball, what was that, your sport?
Oh, yeah, basketball was my sport, and I was good at
it. How tall are you? What are you, 6'3"?
6'3".
Yeah,
and I was almost, by sixth grade, I was like 5'10", 5'11".
Were you really?
So, I mean,
my height is a sixth grade?
Yeah, and awkward as hell, but, it didn't matter if you're a foot taller and they just throw you the ball. Like, you have a pretty nice advantage. And so I was like one of the better players till around middle.
You dunking on the 8 foots and shit?
Oh, yeah.
Where are you?
I couldn't, jump over this piece of paper, but I could go. I was doing the Kevin McHale drop step. Yeah. But that changed when the kids got my height or bigger, but actually had coordination and were athletic. And because I was good as a second grader, I'm going to be good my whole life. And then I remember trying out for JV when I was a sophomore. And I thought I was a starter as a freshman, whatever. This will be fun, but
did you have a freshman team and then a JV and a varsity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good, so I played freshman and was pretty good. And then, when JV came around, I did the, tryouts, and I seemed like everything went well because I was center. I don't have to dribble. You just throw me the ball, and I was way taller. Now this dude's like
the Manute Bowl.
Basically, more George Murison, I think it was. and then I got this the note right before math class, dude. That was pretty humiliating. It was like the list of people.
Oh, just out there,
not my name. And I was like, and it's one of those I remember I cried when I got home, but I was like. Stiff upper lip because I got to go to class. And then a couple days later when I could actually meet the coach, I was what's wrong or why didn't I make the team essentially? And he's you've gone as far as a one-handed player will go. And that was just he pulled my pants down and right. just called me a retard again. I took it as bad as I think you can. And now he might have just meant dribbling. I need to use both hands, which
you're
is
80-20 with your right hand.
Fundamentally sound. Yeah. I was which makes perfect sense. But I thought it was
you gotta have
you're
a
this retard who only has one arm and you smell bad and you'll never get laid kind of thing. And I was and then I was I didn't want to give him the satisfaction of seeing me cry there. So of course I wait till I get home and just waterworks. But that was kind of a turning point because I was I'm not going to be an NBA athlete. And that's why I put I thought, God honest truth, Ryan, if I didn't have cerebral palsy in my head, I would at least been a second round pick.
I don't know.
That's how I thought.
I love you, but I don't know.
Well, that's what I thought.
I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at a lot of things that are not adding up to NBA, okay?
But in my head, I was like,
looks good in a tank top, I'll give it, I was
the fact that no other person from my high school ever made it to the NBA should have been some foreshadowing influence. But no, to get serious.
Bring it down.
It's sort of we're all told, the odds are against you for some reason. And it's if you buy into it, it's like, it's poison. You know, like if you're like you're not going to do that. And like, I'm not an advocate of like, yeah, I never would have been a sprinter or like, you know, power
yeah,
athlete.
Yeah, that whole you can be anything you want. No, you can't.
That's not what I'm saying. But like,
when not everyone could be an Olympic sprinter.
But like when you have something where like you make a big deal of it, it can go one of two ways. You can use it to motivate you.
That's right.
And be like, you know, screw them. I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah, or you'd be like, you're right. I'm not going to be good. I'm going to need all these people to help me. And like, you have so much more privilege because you can grab a Capri Sun with one hand or you can.
Every time I grab it, I squirt the thing.
Yeah, I just had this envy. Like, dude, that's why all the chicks are going to him. Because, like, his wrist circumference is identical from his left to his right.
That's a Capri Sun, man. This is ruining Capri Suns at kids' houses.
Thanks for having me on your show.
He just calls me.
I gotta go call up a therapist now.
Oh my god!
This peanut gallery over here egging him on. Stop it! You're only encouraging him.
I can't hear them. That's soundproof.
So yeah, a few years later, Ryan, I realized that I don't think I would have been power forward material, even with you know.
I mean,
a lack of.
I'm not sure what the percentage of it is for. Humans on this planet, but it's probably around a 1-2, less than 1% of people play in the NBA. So yeah, but good dream, good dream.
Thank you.
God.
Well, were you going to be in the major leagues at some point?
In my head, yeah. In my head.
What? When did you realize you might not start for the Baltimore Orioles?
Oh, way earlier. 13, 14. Yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't. I mean, where there were kids at our age.
Way earlier. I was 14. So that was.
Well, I thought you were like, you know, senior. Oh, yeah, you were trying out for sophomore. I guess same age then. But I didn't – no, I'll be honest. I never thought I'd be a professional pitcher or anything like that because early on we had a kid. His name was Scott Sharp. I have no problem saying his name. And I was just talking to my brother about a kid in his son's league that's okay. like 12, 10, 12, somewhere in there. And this kid was touching like 70, 80 at that age. And I was like, oh – There's one from the area that is doing that. And this kid was just something else. Like it was like a fucking, you know, major league pitcher coming in just throwing meatballs across the plate. And I was like, good fucking God. And I was like, I think he did go into play in like, I want to say I heard Texas minor league organization, stuff like that. I don't know if he ever cracked the bigs, but I'm saying a guy that good then still having a hell of a time.
So you had the wherewithal to kind of put two and two together.
I mean, I needed to be realistic. Look at me. This is not a major league anything body. But comedy. It's a major league comedy body.
It's a major league comedy body.
Yeah, anybody is, really. So was high school... So all right, so after that, what are you doing? Do you ever go out again? Do you decide you're not going to play? Is it the same coach? You just know you're not going to make it?
Well, I wanted to like... kind of show them up in some other way.
That's what I'm saying. How does it motivate you?
Motivate, like, you know, when you're a senior and you can write like laurels in the paper or something like that. I was like, I want to do something good that I can kind of like throw in his face. And so it was academics. Like I was not as retarded as the kids said I was. And so I was doing well in school. And then I got to the point where like that sort of became my thing. A little bit. Like, I mean, I was still friends with a lot of the jocks or whatever, but like that was sort of my identifier. And then I was like, well, if I go to a good college, that'll kind of like, that'll show him. And so I worked hard and I ended up, I graduated second in my class.
And, wow. Did you really?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Thank
you. This is coming from a guy that they say they don't even know how you're going to do it. You repeated kindergarten.
Yeah. Well, I was 25 when I graduated. I didn't mention that part.
I'm sorry. I graduated on the second day of my graduation.
I was the second of three kids total. So no.
Dude, second in your class. That is amazing.
And so it was like, I got like a piece of the yearbook where you can kind of say your things. And I forget like the
whole page is like, fuck you,
cause. Basically. And then they took it out because it was like a little too direct.
Really? Like, you went straight out?
I said like, yeah, like, I forget his name now, like Dan something. I forget his last name. But I said Mr. what Dan, I'll call it. like I'm moving on and you're still here. Or it was some kind of pet, you know, they should have taken it out, you know,
hope you never get tenure.
Yeah, exactly. That girl who said she touched you was real. I hope she was right or something like that. So they took it out. And so he never saw it. And like, honestly, now if I saw it, like, I'd know, like, animosity. But like, at least that was sort of like, I felt good that I got to a point. And again, like, when you're 17, I stupidly thought like, well, if I get into a good college, then I'll be like set. And it was kind of a dumb goal, but like, at least it gave me something that like, it wasn't as reliant on my lack of athleticism.
I mean, I think about it and wonder about it all the time. Like, you know, if you did make that team, you're not the same person, you know? But also you could have folded up and just been a little, you know, tumbleweed and blew away, but you said, fuck it. And you used that adversity to motivate you. And I just love that.
That's
one of my favorite things. I love seeing people move forward like that.
And I think you kind of need some of these like bad things.
You do. That's exactly right. Like this guy, now you look back on it, played a prominent role in your life. Absolutely did.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And while it didn't feel good to be told what you were told, what it did do, but it's at your core, that's you though, is it motivated you to go say, well, fuck that. I'll show you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if he hadn't done that, if you hadn't had the balls to go out, I mean, if you hadn't had the aspirations to be a fucking NBA player, bro, you wouldn't be second in your class. That's impressive, man. Second in your class. That's really good.
Thank you.
What is that? What Laude is that?
It was salutatorian.
Is that what it's called? What's magnum?
That's college.
Shit. Oh, is it?
So yeah, high school, it's like valedictorian.
You know where I graduated in my class? In the S section.
But I heard
it wasn't any motherfucking numbers. I was in the S's. It went to SH's and then the SI's, and I was right there behind the SIB's.
Like, he's here. Just let him walk. His brother will be proud.
That's really good, dude. So where did you end up going to college?
UCLA.
Okay.
Not terribly far, and then I started playing basketball again. I mean, that was fun because, I mean, I was never like good, but I would do it just for fun, like intramurals, like rec leagues and stuff like that.
Through the college?
Yeah, more or less. Like, I mean, I'm sure it took some semesters off, but that was cool because then I could just play for fun. And like, it was kind of therapeutic to just not worry about trying to make a team or be able to hit a jumper.
And all this time that's passing, what is happening with your health? Do you have to have it monitored? Do you go get checked out? Like, what is going on? Because you said you actually limp less now.
So. Yeah, I think some of it is you just grow into your body. But yeah, around high school is when the physical therapy stopped. But then I got to kind of do regular weight training like everyone else.
Right, yeah.
And then... Actually, getting into years later, I started doing yoga at Bikram for a while because actually it was a girl from comedy I thought was kind of cute, and then she got me into it. But that helped my balance a lot. But around junior high, I realized, like, you know, other than having a hard time, like, you know, those diagrams where you have to fold and then like unfold, they're like puzzles and stuff. Like, I was awful with those. Everything else I was pretty good at. So it's like, you know, I'm all right. In my head, you know, like I don't think I have any learning disabilities or anything like that. So like that just took this big weight off my shoulders where it was like, all right, now I want to, like, instead of just being okay and not proving I'm not a retard, like I want to be like the best in my math class, or I want to be the best in my history class, just to prove I can.
That's awesome, dude. Let's take a quick break for our sponsors here, guys. Let's talk about something we can all agree on: saving money. Honey is a free browser extension that scans the web for coupon codes and discounts while you shop online. Honey automatically applies the biggest savings to your cart at checkout like magic. It works on over 20,000 sites like Amazon, eBay, Newegg, Razor, and more. It takes zero effort to install, just two clicks, and you'll start saving anytime you shop online. So I bought a baby monitor, right? I was looking for another monitor for the room. $43 I saved. Amazon had the same thing. Over at Honey, boom, same exact one, saved me $43. I felt great about saving the money. And I went on their Twitter, at Honey. Go check out their mentions. You don't think I'm being for real? Check out the mentions from everybody over there talking about how great Honey actually is. And I know you might think it sounds too good to be true, like it's free and it saves you money, but what's the catch? It's pretty simple, all right? When you use a coupon provided by Honey, they earn a small commission from the merchant, and they pass along some of the savings to their members. So it's a win-win for everybody. Over 10 million people are already saving with Honey. Honey has over 130,000 plus five-star reviews on the Google Chrome store. Time Magazine calls Honey basically free money. So there's really no reason not to use Honey. It's free to use, free, and easy to install on your computer in just two clicks. Don't take it from me. Take it from my subscribers. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/rooster. That's joinhoney.com/rooster. joinhoney.com/rooster. Honey, online savings simplified. And now a word from another sponsor, Raycon. It's 2019. Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. But before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. All right, I got these the other day. They sent me a pair. I hit up my stepson. I'm like, Derek, do you even know? Before I could say anything, are those Raycons? Are those Oh, dude, those are awesome. And I was like, you're not getting them. You're not getting them, all right? Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing. The company was actually co-founded by Ray J, and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Cardi B are already obsessed. Raycon's E50 wireless earbuds have totally changed the game for me. They're so comfortable and so easy to take anywhere, all right? Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet with no dangling wires or stems. And of course, they don't just look great, they sound great too. I wear them everywhere. You'll see me on a flight wearing them. They drown out all the sound. Planes are generally loud. You can hear everything. I can watch my movies. I can listen to my music. Out exercising, they stay in. They don't fall out of my ears. Raycon offers their wireless earbuds for everyone in a range of fun colors and at an unbeatable price. Go to buyraycon.com/honeydew to get 15% off your order. That's buyraycon.com/honeydew for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. If you've been eyeing a pair, now is the time to get an amazing deal. I'm going to tell you one more time, buyraycon.com/honeydew. Now back to the dew. So then you go to college, and are you dating? Like, what is that?
I was. In fact, I had a pretty hot girlfriend, too, for a while. Like, yeah. So that was like, that's what I'm saying. High school was good. Like, I got my first real girlfriend, I think, around senior year. And then she went to a different college, but it was close enough to UCLA where we were continuing to date. And that was like, if fourth grade was my apex, this was close. I was like, okay, it was like sophomore year of college.
Yeah.
And
your penis is apex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I was like, I was like, yeah, she's smart too. I bet we'll get married. You know, like, well, kids will be good looking because of her, you know.
Because
like,
of her.
And then it was one that was like, you know, you visit, like, oh, things are cool. Then, like, the calls are a little less frequent. And then I remember sophomore year, I think I need to get some I need to establish my independence. It was one of those, and I was so ignorant, right? Like, I'm like, oh, we're in love, you know? And I was like, what are you talking about, independence? Like, we love each other, don't we? And then she essentially broke up without saying it. And I was like, devastated. And then like a week or two later, she was like dating some guy from her class, you know, at her college. And I was like, fuck her, you know, like, and you know, that was like, everyone's been dumped, but the first time, I mean, and I'd been dumped after that too, but the first one hurt the most. But that was, again, another blessing in disguise, because I was an econ major. I didn't really like know what I wanted to do. I was a huge comedy nerd, and I was like, you know what? I'm not going to live my life like she wanted me to, even though she never wanted me. No, I was like, I'm going to go to New York.
Yeah,
all this crazy stuff. I'm going to go to New York, and I'm going to make something of myself. My older brother lived there. And so I took some time off from college, and I got an internship at Conan. And that was what got me into stand-up, too, because a lot of the writers were stand-ups.
Right.
And so I did an open mic like around the time I was leaving. And it was basically just reason to, like, talk shit about the girl who dumped me. Remember, I had some joke about, like, my ex said she needed to find her independence, and she's able to do that on her boss's cock. And I thought that was just like, oh! Like this, like, you know, oh, if she ever heard that, but like, she wouldn't care.
Matter of fact, I was in the same bar drinking like, that you were in, but I didn't even hear it.
Yeah. She's like, set was boring, honestly. But that was like because of her, or in my head because of her.
Because of that.
Because of the situation. Yes. I got to New York, and then because of getting to New York, I saw these people that were like making a living doing comedy. And then they told me, they're like, you know, there was an open mic here. And like, I went and like, it was awful, as you'd expect. And so I just sat there and I was like, you know what? I can come up with something. Like, I could have like a punchline. I don't know if it'll be funny, but I worked my ass off that week to come up with like a few minutes. When was your first stand-up?
Ever?
Ever, yeah.
I was 20, and it was in Baltimore at a place called Winchester's upstairs above this. It's so funny because last year I went home and did a show, and I went there and I took pictures of the place, and I was like, it's just trippy to be, mm-hmm. you know, that's the first place I ever did it. And then I only did it for a few months, and then just a bunch of life shit happened, and I didn't do it again until I was 27 when I was out here.
Okay.
Yeah.
But after that, was it like a jumping out of a, you know, with a parachute and you feeling stuff, or is it just like, yeah, I scratched that itch.
What, after
your first time?
No, I loved it. I loved every fucking second of it. And then quickly I learned too, because one night the power went out and the mic wasn't there. I was like, oh fuck, you know, you gotta be more than just sure. funny. You gotta know how to control a room and all, you know, deal with bullshit. So yeah, I got a quick taste early on, but I loved it. There's, you know, there's no drug like that immediate feedback.
Yeah.
There's positive feedback. Positive.
Well, then the bad feedback is sometimes... It
fuels you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need it. You got some bad... Look at that. You ended up second in your class. Imagine if he'd have told you you were a piece of shit, you might have got first.
Exactly.
If he took a, so fuck that guy.
I'd be asking you the questions. You. Yeah.
I'm the one over here not even knowing about the loudies in college.
There'd you don't be books need to be about me, shit. Not some dead comedian. Yeah.
All right, I want to talk to you more about your health, because I told you I have, it's called Charcot-Marie tooth disease. It's the three doctors who named it. It's a really ridiculous name, but kudos to your name. But I'm missing a layer of muscle in my calves, and the way it's always been explained to us is it's, you know, it's, I don't want to say borderline, but it's, the doctor one time told us it's like, you know, a little more and it's MS.
Okay.
You know? So
MS adjacent.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if that's true or not, but what I do remember is we were at Hopkins getting some tests because, you know, it was obviously hereditary. My father has it or had it. My brothers have it. I have it. And this doctor, he's a doctor. He said, you guys are lucky you're not Jerry's kids. And I just remember my dad going, hey, guys, step outside real quick. And we knew. We went there. We were right there. We were all up on that door. And my dad ripped that motherfucker just up and down. Like, what the fuck are you talking? And, you know, just, and we were like, oh, we were so proud of our dad. But then it was so fucking hilarious. Because also, as a kid, you're seeing your dad who yells at you, yell at somebody, you're like, yeah,
at a doctor,
all three,
too.
Yeah. And that's why I always say, you know what they call a doctor to finish last? Not second, last in his class?
What's that?
Doctor. They still call him doctor. You don't have to be good to be a fucking doctor.
No, you don't.
So how has it affected your life moving forward? Like, you're a dad. Are you keeping up with your kids? Are you, you know, how do you handle it day to day? Is it painful ever?
No. It's very mild. Like, I mean, you mentioned you didn't know I had it. And it doesn't,
I had no
idea. It doesn't get worse. So it's like...
It won't for you?
It won't.
It won't.
It impacts, like, it's most noticeable, like, the edge of my fingers. Like, so you can do this and this and, like... So, I'm not a great typist. Not going to be a sprinter. What I am a little bit worried about is like as I get older, like balance, like a lot of big cause of death is like slip and fall.
Yeah, it is.
And so that like I'm just trying to be more active and like strengthening my legs and ankles and just trying to like keep moving so I don't trip off the stairs at, you know, 50 something and die, you know.
Cats running that by your avoided. Feet and shit. Yeah. I think about that all the time. Old people with cats running by, and they're like, oh my God, and they trip and fall and die.
Right.
And they're just done like that because the fucking cat ran by.
But it's like kids are awkward anyway as you're growing up, you know, and I was a tall kid. So I think being tall and having a little bit of cerebral palsy magnified it. But it's really like not that different than any normal person like you, Ryan. Well, that wouldn't have your disease.
So there's no medications, no nothing. You don't have to do any.
No.
You said yoga helped with balance.
Yeah,
though,
that
right?
does. And there's it stuff really I did. Should be doing more of, like the small muscle group exercises. You know, stuff like lifting 1 foot an inch 200 times, like stuff that
really?
Like people should do. You know, just to get like coordination improvement. But strength training and stretching, because I think people with CP are more inflexible. More spastic. So that's other than that, it's no different.
Dude, you're a fucking soldier. So in 2012, you had some stories about 2012 here, your boss's wife.
Oh yeah. That was, I had a good job and a good job in that. Like I enjoyed it. In fact, through the Red Rock years, I worked from home most of the time. Doing investments for this investment fund, and it was a little bit like Shark Tank, because we had like a few million bucks and we could invest in public companies directly. I mean that were looking for money, and it was a fun gig, man. I really enjoyed it.
Did you ever invest in something that blew up, like the Banjo Minnow or some shit like that?
We invested in something that was what was it 50 Cent headphones, like the company that made that. And we got out before it ended up not making a lot of money later, but like before we could sell, it was up like thousands of percent. And like, I don't know what my cut would have been. It wouldn't have been that much, but still that was, but well, one investment, we put in $100,000 and we pulled out $1 million in about a year.
Damn.
And that was a pharmaceutical something or other. And like, it was just kind of luck. Cause like, I don't know what made that any different than this other one. But I remember one day it was like, and I remember putting in the trade orders, just shaking, you know, just be like, can you sell? Cause like, I thought something would happen and like, we'd lose the money. But anyhow, so that I had a really fun job. And I think in some ways it kept me from pursuing comedy, but I was like, why do I want to pursue? I'm making almost six figures. I'm working from home. Like life's good.
Yeah.
Then we moved to the Bay Area. And then my boss calls me and he's like, my wife has really serious cancer, stage 4, I think, and we're shutting down. And I never thought like I'd be without a job, you know, and like I was making money doing comedy, but not enough to like, make, you know, support my family.
Especially up there.
My wife was in medical training, so she wasn't making a lot of money. Luckily I saved money. And then it was like 2 days later, I got a text or an email from Rooster Teeth Feathers and I got my first headlining gig there. It was like a Wednesday show.
Nice.
Ryan Sigler probably couldn't make it. And I filled in and I was like, life's going to be okay. I'm going to make $48 from this gig. But that was, it was just an example of like kind of stand up, pulling me through it. Oh yeah. And my son was due a month later.
Your first child.
My first child was due a month later. So it was like, you know, I never felt worse in terms of being like a bad provider in my life. Luckily my wife, the big reason why we're together is like, she just is like when things are bad, she's at her best. And like, she just like, fuck it. You know, like whatever, like we'll get through it. And like, I should have known that, because I suspected like this job wouldn't last.
That's nice to have when shit's at it. That's,
oh my God.
At
like
best when it's the worst.
She's awesome. Like,
that is
I
great.
Mean, like obviously we fight and stuff, but like when there's like gnarly things, she's so calm. And like, I was just like, oh, thank you, sweetie. And, so that got me to doing some awful like online comedy work, you know, where people are like, all right, we got this money. And I remember talking to you about this because I called you from the Bay Area. And I was like, I'm looking for content. And I knew you had some pilots or some stuff you and Tom did. I was like, and then I asked, do you have like 12 of those? And you're like, Maddie, no one's going to do 12 if it didn't get picked up. And I was like, you know, you got a point.
12's a lot.
So I got into I don't want to say all the brands, but I was just trying to like make a living in comedy. And then that kind of got me into some cannabis companies that they're like, oh, we want to start the ESPN of weed. And I was like, that sounds cool.
What does that mean, ESPN of weed?
Like, there were some ex-TV guys somewhere in LA, somewhere in the Bay Area, and they wanted to have like a lifestyle channel based on weed. So they thought maybe a good, like, who would be, maybe Food Network.
It's called Vice.
Exactly. So I should have done a Google search. But that kind of got me into that world, which has since helped, because it's been a good source of income for other things.
Do you smoke? Does smoking help with what you cerebral palsy?
It can. In fact, I started
CBD.
Big time. Like, and it helps for people who are a lot more. Like, I mean, like on the spectrum, I'm really fortunate. But like,
I understand
if there are people who have these really gnarly spastic episodes where they shake their head like repeatedly for like 20 minutes, and God, imagine what that does to your muscles, to your bones, and so they'll take CBD oil or some, it's more powerful, THC oil, and like it's anecdotal.
Oh, they'll take THC oil.
Yeah, I mean, and it's
I've seen the videos of kids with seizures,
and they're crazy. Yeah.
And it just calms them down.
And like, I had some sleeping issues just because I was like, how are we going to afford to live here? And that's when I got my card. So it put me to bed. Like,
how are we going to afford to live here? It's right up
it's,
there.
Yeah. It's not going to regrow any nerves for me though. That's
for sure. I want to hear about this 2017 gig right here. You see this one where you sent an email?
Oh, yeah. So we moved back to my wife got a job in Orange County. And so I was like, moving to Laguna Beach. She's like, you want to move? I was like, oh, yeah. It's not a bad place to live. And
yeah.
And my comedy career takes a little hit. Oh, well. And so I had to get a real job again. And this was at a like old school financial services company, basically pitching index fund, mutual funds to like, very conservative in terms of like investment style. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty good at it, you know, I'm not great, but enough to where like I was employable. And then like they wanted to get more clients, you know, so no shit, you want to get more clients. And this one client was this family, and it's like you see a lot of this, I'm sure. It's like almost like the buses. It's like the ones that make the money are real smart. And then the kids doesn't always carry over to the next generation. So they do all sorts of things to like preserve wealth for their deadbeat families.
Yeah.
And so there's this
trust fund
kids, but these were like 50-year-old kids, you know? And so you got to,
they're not kids.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're counting on mommy and daddy's
right,
money.
Yeah. I bet.
And so it was a relatively big, you know, several million dollar opportunity. And so you got to get a bunch of information. So say you're a client, I need to know where you live, your income, you know, a lot of personal, but not like I'm not asking you to pull your pants down kind of thing. So you write all down, and this was a family. So I had to get it from everyone.
Let me see a jump rope.
Exactly. Let me see. Can you squeeze a Capri Sun with one hand? Are you always so mean, Ryan? If putting me down makes you taller, fine.
No, I didn't put you down. I'm telling you, it's your chance to have redemption on them. Thanks. Be like, listen, motherfucker, you jump rope.
And so I sent, it was like a brother. I sent one brother's information to the wrong brother. And the one, and I was like, oh, fuck. You know,
and was that guy getting more than the other or anything like that?
No, but one was like, he was making more. And like the brother who's like information I told couldn't have been cooler. He's like, basically shit happens. I had to disclose it. And I was like, dude, I'm really sorry. But like, it was this attachment, you know, that kind of looked the same. It's the same questions. And then the guy, the other brother was just like pissed. You know,
was he getting the shorter end of the stick?
I don't know what the deal was.
Yeah, why be so mad about that?
Because he was mad that like he his brother-in-law or someone saw like how much money he made, and I was like, dude, like I messed up. Like,
I'm not a good typist.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
I told
well, like, I should have pulled the cerebral palsy card, and I was like, you know, if I had two functioning hands, you know what? I should have sued the people. Oh God,
I should have used my right hand to reach over and hit that.
I missed an opportunity here, yeah. The CP affected that brain. It said, only send blank attachments and read it 3 times, Matt, before clicking send.
Oh, I would have done that. I had blood in my lungs. When? Last night?
I grew up in the rough part of Carlsbad, yeah. and so then, like, my boss, like, and, like, I never really liked the job. But, you know, I was like, you made a mistake. And we're going to try to, like, basically, like, rectify it, but it was a big mistake. And I was just like, yes, I made a mistake. Like, how? And then, so a few days later, I got called in, and like, they're basically, they let me go.
They just said that we can't do
because
it.
The guy was like, still like, I think what it was is like, they didn't know if it was going to be a client or not. If, you know, I'm the sacrificial lamb, we got rid of that loser who, you know, had this breach. but like, we want you, we want your money, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And like, I mean, they gave some other reasons, like they went through all my old emails, and there was one that I sent to a different client that had, I sent on my phone, that there was like a junk email on it that just like self-populated, and it never went anywhere because it was like a defunct email address. But they referenced that as like a second strike. But it meant they went through everything. I was like, that's the best you could find. You know, like in my head, I was like, if this is like my fatal flaw, like,
then I'm getting the fuck out.
And this was like a month or two after we bought a house, and it wasn't cheap. And I didn't really, you know, I wanted to do something else career-wise, but I wanted to kind of like transition smoothly and get back to comedy anyway. But then I remember getting home, and I kept it in front of my kids because I was like, I didn't want them to be nervous. And my wife put my boys to bed. Yeah, we have two now. And
yeah, I was going to say, at that point.
Yeah. So I got two. Yeah. Oh, and then my wife also started another business. So we got like extra loans. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, I thought we were going to sell the house, which I know in the whole scheme of things, like, oh, some guy's going to sell his Laguna Beach house, poor thing. But like, it hurt, you know, because like, we just moved into it like 3 months before. And so I break the news to my wife, and like, she just kind of like, fuck them. You know, like, that was kind of her attitude. Like, they fired you for that. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, it sucks, but like, you know, like, what are we going to do money wise? She's like, we'll figure it out. You know, like, at least that night, you know, like, she's like, you know, like, then I kind of lost it a little. I was just like, oh. And then, you know, but then I had this like book to do, and like, you know, and like, and
yeah, when did you start working on this?
As I was working, you know, like 2 years before that.
2 years.
Maybe three ish. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, about two. And so it gave me this actually kind of gave me a purpose, because that's what I put down here. I was like, no, now I'm an author. I'm not just a comedian. I'm a comedian and an author. And like, I don't know if you call it fate or whatever, but my wife just did super well at her job, and she actually did some consulting work that I could help her with. So like, we had to lose the nanny, but then I was like making my kids breakfast, walking them to school. Like, in hindsight, like, it was the best. I don't know if it was the best, but I'm so glad it happened now that I know like we could kind of weather that storm.
Yeah.
And then
married up. I'm,
oh my, yeah, no, she's a doctor, so she does well for herself.
Holy shit. You did well for yourself too.
And she's hot too, so that's a but now I don't know if this will help her career or not, but you know, even so, like, we didn't know if we'd be able to like get the money together, and she just worked her ass off and kind of pulled me up, and then I was the Mr. Mom for a while, and it was pretty fun.
That's great. I do want to talk a little bit about the book here. Why don't you, do you mind sharing like one of your favorite stories or something that you didn't know about Greg that you ended up just really loving?
Sure. One, that he would confide to Colin Quinn like regularly that he should quit comedy.
Really?
That like, cause he,
what was his,
that he wasn't good enough, that like he wasn't living up to David Tell. Or like,
other, I mean, nobody other, lives up to David Tell.
He could come close, I think. Like, yeah. Know. But it was
but if
funny.
He thinks he's not.
Yeah, and so that, I mean, because comedians are so insecure, and I wasn't surprised he was insecure, but I was surprised that it got to that like level. And according to those around him, he suffered from the imposter syndrome, and that's when you think it's like a clinical diagnosis where you have a condition where your work is never good enough. And you think your work is crap, whereas like a perfectionist will think my work's never good enough, but my work's really, really good.
I see.
And so that was just like, what, Geraldo? Like, he thinks he shouldn't do that? Like, right. So it was kind of liberating. I was like, I can tell some corny jokes. Like, you know, if he was insecure, it's all right for me to be insecure too.
What's the funniest thing you found in this book of Greg Geraldo?
It still comes to me like the Dennis Leary incident.
Yeah.
That was just,
I see the roast as I'm going through here, marriage and family.
I think that was him as like, he was off the cuff, and the quick story was he was on Tough Crowd, and they were talking about North Korea, and Colin Quinn as host asked like, should we take a tougher stance? And Gerald was like, well, maybe there's a nonviolent way to deal with this. And Dennis Leary piped in. He's like, nonviolent way? A country that we hate, that hates us, has got nukes pointed at us? I don't think so. And then Geraldo's like, oh, yeah, like Russia, for example, that big Russian war. And it was just like, So like, whoa, you know, like he was right. Like that was a really good point.
Yeah, he was great.
And that was, I think, my favorite like nugget from his work. But there's many more. I mean, you really got to buy like 4 or 5 copies to get the full to get the full sense. You know.
Well, dude,
I was sprinkling on the appetizer, Sickler. There's a lot more to it than that.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading it, and thank you for being here, man. I really appreciate you coming on. I'm proud of you, dude.
I'm proud of you, Ryan. Thank you. I'm also glad
to know so much more about you. I had no idea, and the struggle's real, and you're doing a great job, man. Will you please one more time, all the social media, where you can find the book, all that stuff?
Sure. Hit it on Amazon. It's called Greg Giraldo, A Comedian's Story. On Twitter handles, Facebook, Instagram, at Greg Giraldo Book. The website is greggiraldobook.com. And I'm at Matty B Game on Twitter.
All right, brother. Thank you so much, man. Proud of you. I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.